That Great Business Show, Ireland's best business podcast.
ThatGreatBusinessShow.com is brought to you by DeFacto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide.
Welcome to episode 93 of That Great Business Show, posting on the 24th of June, 2022. Still more people contacting me about episode 90. That's the hour-long interview with Professor Martin Curley, who wants to make Ireland's health system the best in Europe in the next 36 months. Every one of the 100,000 or so people working in the HSE should listen to his radical plans. And anyone else who is touched by our health service, which means every one of us, should also listen to it and give Martin your full backing. Episode 90, that's where you'll find it. On this episode, I'll be asking what's gone wrong with economics. The textbooks say one thing, but the real economy is doing something completely different. A top economist will give his prognosis about what's really going on and what it means for your business. And as we always say on That Great Business Show, we will remain a jargon-free zone. Stay tuned. Everything will be hyper-intelligible. And for something so completely different, we have a doctor in the house. She's big in AI, that's in artificial intelligence, and how to apply it to make your business even better. She works at one of Ireland's so-called unicorns, but she also gets through life with rescue dogs, a donkey, vintage tractor, and so on. And she's even been voted a cultural energizer, whatever that is. We'll find out for you. All of these great insights are brought to you thanks to DeFacto Shaving Oil, the world's best shaving oil. Not a beard oil, a shaving oil, made in Mayo, sold worldwide.
DeFacto Shaving Oil, smooth as.
My favourite name for a pub in Dublin is the Bleeding Horse on Camden Street. I don't know why it's so called, but I do know it's where the journey of one of Ireland's so-called unicorns, companies valued at over $1 billion, began. Whether true or not, it's claimed that the originators of the business sketched out some ideas on beer mats in the Bleeding Horse. 20 years later, WorkHuman operates employees, reward and incentive schemes for some of the world's biggest companies, including Cisco, Moderna, Merck, LinkedIn and Intuit. More than 6 million employees are on the WorkHuman platform around 180 countries. Dr. Andrea C. Johnson is Vice President at WorkHuman, as well as being Chairperson at WITS Ireland, that's the Women in Technology and Science. And she's here to talk us about positive uses of artificial intelligence in the workplace. But first, I have to know about the video of a donkey and herself that you sent me. Andrea, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Lovely to be here. Thank you so much.
You've got a donkey. A talking donkey.
I actually have two. One of them was very camera shy and wouldn't play at all. So Minnie wouldn't come into shot. But if you look at the video clip I sent you, you can see Spud's ears moving as if to say, oh, I've got to stand here. There might be carrots coming my way.
Well, I will try to post the video because it's the best. I can easily say it's the best that I've been sent over 93 episodes.
Well, thank you very much.
Now, that's the donkey. And then you've got stray dogs and a vintage tractor. Now, you are talking to somebody who loves cars here. What kind of a vintage tractor have you got?
It's a Super Dexter.
And why have you got a Super Dexter?
Just to get round. Oh, okay. To get round on and do the jobs, the outside jobs.
Well, we're not here to talk donkeys. We're not here to talk Super Dexters. We are here to talk about WorkHuman. If you had told me what I read about the company 20 years ago, people, as I say, in the Bleeding Horse, working out that people need to be encouraged in their workplace, I would have said, get up the yard. That's a very famous Irish phrase that you may not be familiar with. And I, yet again, have been proven so wrong. How big is WorkHuman now?
So WorkHuman now, as you say, we're an Irish unicorn, so over a billion.
In value, yeah.
Yes. 7 million users on the platform.
Oh, seven.
Yeah.
Whenever I got that six.
Yeah, we lost a million there, Conal. You need to have a chat, yes.
It must have been off your website. see the way I just chucked the blame back at you?
180 countries. I think one of the really good things, though, which sort of brings the scale piece in, every 2 seconds, a human is celebrated or recognised on our platform. 2 seconds. Like, that's phenomenal. As you say, go back 20 years. Could you have even imagined it?
I would have said those guys have been at the beer too long. But so tell me what it actually does. It looks... I'm trying to think of a nice phrase. Like, I'm old school. Go to work, come home. Do your work, go home. But you guys want the people of celebrations and birthdays and milestones and births, deaths, marriages, whatever. And you celebrate those. And that's part of the work human package.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're a SaaS company. And we have something called the Work Human Cloud. And there are 3 key tenets to that. And the first piece is all around recognition. So it's thanks. And it's actually celebrating people in work. So let's say Brian, our fabulous, lovely sound engineer on this episode, does a brilliant job. And you think, actually, above and beyond, because the Scouse tones, I'd say, has that equipment all over the place. And you actually want to recognise what a great job he's done. So you can imagine, you know, the obviously Brian is super appreciative as well. And that's amplified across the organisation. So that's basically the whole piece around the thanks piece.
And people pay you for this, because I was looking at the income of the company. It's through the roof. You must be tipping towards $1 billion in turnover, are you?
Yes.
Like, mad. But keep going. Impress me more.
But you know, it's, if you think about it now, think about the last time someone congratulated you personally, Cole, on a job well done and the pride that you had in that. And especially if you thought it was actually bang on, you think, yeah, I've done a great job there. Let's fast forward to your 100th episode, which isn't that long away. And you'll think, yeah, you know, this is actually 100 episodes in. I think I'm doing a really great job. And then that moment is amplified across the organisation. That's really important in terms of you and your career and how you feel about the organisation, but also to start to knit together those pieces around organisational culture. And I think that's really important.
And your background is in connecting the technology with the data. So you will be able to tell me that this actually pays realizable, physical, touchable dividends?
So, I mean, I think, can you imagine 20 years ago how hard that was to talk about ROI? You know, what's the ROI on this? And one of the beauty about things about Work Human is we have over 100 million data points. And these data points are moments of human connection. And we are actively mining those now. And very early on, we would have had really very rich, not anecdotal, very rich case studies with some of our key corporate partners. And you can see some of those on the website now. So there's a brilliant one with LinkedIn. And it's a few years old now. But they were saying, you know, based on what they've seen with working with us, if they recognise their employees at least 4 times a year in some way, that they will have a 96% retention rate.
Okay, that's impressive.
Well, it is when you think about, I'm sure you've had people on this show talking about the Great Resignation.
Correct. And you know, because I only read it yesterday, there's a new thing, the Great Resignation amongst the bosses. Did you know the bosses are now saying, I'm out of here. If they can go, I can go.
Yeah, because it's very difficult to manage.
But that is the new Great Resignation. So, yeah, so you have, or sorry, LinkedIn had, because you say it's a couple of years old, 96%. That's good. That was pre-COVID though, was it?
Yes, but I think what we're saying there, you talked about what's the ROI. We know that if you recognise someone consistently and celebrate them for doing great things, usually attached to sort of your corporate culture or things that you're trying to achieve in work, there's a stickiness that's created there with that person. They have a higher sense of belonging.
So, they can't wait for their other next 3 months because then they'll get another recognition.
Well, you know, it depends how good they are.
So what form does a celebration take? Now, you don't organise them, do you?
So celebration would be, we have a huge piece around life events. And this is about, if you think about when you bring your whole self into work. So like one of the nicest celebration moments I've had, we are super users of our own platform, as you can imagine.
No, there's a word, there's a phrase, we eat our own dog food. I looked at that and I said, I have a dog. I wouldn't like to eat dog food.
No. Well, mine get fed chicken and beef, so actually you could eat my dog food, but you'd be okay. But no, we are super users, very much super users of our own platform. And one of the life events that I had was when I got my second donkey, I did a little video and I'd sent it to some of my friends, and they actually posted kind of a welcome award to Minnie to the house, where she's kind of running around the place, booking and doing all sorts of crazy things.
That's and, with a B, just for those listeners.
That's the Scouse tones again. Poor Brian's going to earn his money on this episode, isn't he?
He's going to have a big celebration.
But no, I think celebration is important, and it's very much around, you would have seen way more of that in COVID about bringing your whole self to work. You know, you see, you'd hear the washing on in the background, or the kids that come in, or the dogs would bark when the postman comes. We started to see all that. But way before that, we were actually talking about people being able to bring their whole selves to work, to recognise some of these things around marriages, moving new houses. I always feel like we should give them a bit of time off with PTSD with that now as well, with new homes, you know, engagements. And you get to see these wonderful pictures and moments from people that you're working alongside.
But why does it need a company like WorkHuman? And I'll tell you why, is because back in the day when I did work, and I'll name him because he was very, very, very good at it, I worked with a guy called Pádraig Slattery, Slattery PR. And everything was celebrated, you know, Mondays, Fridays, Wednesdays. It's after 12 o'clock. It's before 5 p.m. Everything was celebrated there. And it, yes, it did work. But why do you need a software platform like WorkHuman?
Because I think now with the data that we have, I think it's really important that we share sort of the best practices. And we're disruptors. We were disruptors 20 years ago. We're still disrupting now. And having that a sort of software that can help support large organisations to start to drive into this conversation about how we bring humanity to the workplace. How can you encourage people to bring their whole selves to work? I mean, it really is a movement. We have pioneered a movement.
What other form does it take? Because it can't be just about celebrations.
Well, I think right now, I mean, and since the sort of the Great Resignation, a lot of people are talking about how we hire top talent, how we actually, you know, how can we make, you know, look at people within that holistic lens, talk to them about career progression and really make sure that they feel that they belong to a company. And that whole belonging piece, if you start to unpack that, that's where that whole diversity and equity comes in. And a lot of our data support those conversations in work. And I think that's really important today, that people feel that they can A, start to bring their whole selves to work, but B, have real authentic conversations with either the organisation or their managers around what this means to them.
This is not made for me, because all I'm hearing is big corporation, which makes me shudder, and like Big Brother as well. Is there not a cynical side to this?
No, and I would often, you know, I would often be asked to go and look at organisations, go in and especially pre-pandemic, go in and chat to them around the importance of their culture. And this was in the days where you could pop out and you'd have a coffee and you weren't on a Zoom call. So you'd be sitting in their lobbies, and even on not the big multinationals, the smaller to medium-sized businesses who were trying to figure this out. And you'd sit in the lobby and you'd see, you usually have some sort of slogan or a couple of maybe their corporate pieces that they're trying to get to. And they're usually very proudly displayed. And then we get into the boardroom, we all start to have a chat. And I said, it's funny, isn't it? I've just been sitting there having a coffee and I'm looking at, you know, one of your values is respect at work. You know, people don't shed that as they walk out the door and pick it up as they walk back in, as they clock in. That's something that you're looking to hire for. You're looking for humans who actually embody the things that you want to do. And so I think we have to have very authentic conversations within the workplace about actually what does that mean? And one of the things I love about WorkHuman, like we have a number of values that we have attached to our program. I think five of those have not changed in 20 years. And it's things like respect for customer, respect for each other, quality. These are the things that are in the DNA of this organisation. And I mean, I'm of a certain vintage now that, you know, I think when your own personal values align to the organisation that you work with, that's when the magic happens. It really, really does.
Magic.
Oh, yeah, the magic.
Like, retention is one thing. What about, call me old-fashioned, squeezing some extra out of the workers? Does it work? Do you actually get higher productivity?
Yes, and I think lots of companies who come to us, they're actually looking more with that lens of innovation. And it's very much around that kind of, you know, imagination and determination equals that innovation and how they can measure that within the workplace. And yes, you are seeing that. And there's lots of case studies on our website that you can go and dip in and out of where we're actually proving that through data.
Right. Facebook and LinkedIn and probably Microsoft and others will tell me that it's Andrea's birthday or Andrea has a new donkey or something like that. Why must there be a separate platform for this? Sell me the platform. Tell me what it does above and beyond a Facebook notification or a LinkedIn notification. Everybody who gets a new job seems to tell me on LinkedIn that they're like terribly excited by whatever they're doing or, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is not a sort of, you know, a notification platform. This platform very much is that layer of technology which enables you to amplify across the organization great work. And that.
Okay. Take LinkedIn because we'll say Mary is in LinkedIn. She's just done something fantastic in LinkedIn in Dublin. Do you then tell LinkedIn in San Francisco or in Bangalore or whatever that Mary in Dublin is brilliant?
So very much so on the link, that would be a worldwide sort of, that it depends how these are set up, but if that's a worldwide program, absolutely, Mary will be celebrated across the organisation.
And
then colleagues come in and will actually write congratulations and say, Mary, I didn't know you were doing that. This is absolutely phenomenal. And then maybe there's a follow-up email or something to say, can I come and talk to you about that? Because actually, I've been trying to figure that out for ages. It's breaking down silos.
Okay, now that is important.
Yes.
No ifs on that one. What about celebrating people by giving them? I'm not asking you to do this now, but paying them more. People love being paid more. Did you know that?
I'm writing this down for my own manager when I get back into him, Jim. Yeah, no. I mean, listen, I think right now we're in, everyone is very aware of like where the market is in terms, especially in terms of technology. I would liken it, Conal, to like the Hunger Games recruiting at the moment. It's a tough, tough gig.
You have 93 vacancies on your website. Did you know that? I think that you have every form of an engineer who could ever want to work for you.
Yes.
There's a job for him or her sitting there.
Yes. And what would make us different to maybe another SaaS company?
You know that we're jargon-free here. Software as a service.
Yes. What would make us different? And I tell you what made the difference for me. The product is the big piece there. The product is what will attract you to Workhuman. The reason why you'd stay is the connection and the people. So, I mean, it's the product that would differentiate you. If I have to put three or four people on, you know, organizations on the table and I know nothing about them and I don't know anyone who's in them, it will be the product that you'd be maybe, it will pique your interest. You'd have a look. But once you're in, and once you start to make those connections and do this phenomenal work,
you can't get out.
Well, I'm 10 years next month. I'm 10 years in.
Does that mean that you get a huge, big celebratory thing? And
well, I hope so. Like I've started dropping the hints already. Do you know what I mean?
But is that not automated? Does that?
It is automated. Yes. Yes.
So you're pretty guaranteed.
Yes.
So there must be other stuff. You've got, did you say 100 million data points?
Yes.
You must know, you know, what they brush their teeth with.
But these are very much around, this is human connection. This is me reaching into you to recognise or celebrate you, or you actually reaching back to me to congratulate me about something. So this is very much around human connection. So when, if you take that sort of a step further, then why would we be wanting now to maybe step into that AI piece? Well, if you think about this fabulous data, and we've got some, as I say, brilliant case studies. I would go and look at the website, super, super stuff on that. But we've all done, you're going to tell me you haven't done it now, we've all done unconscious bias training. Have you done it?
No.
I'm going to put you down for something.
I know what you're talking about, though. And I recognise all my biases. I am the biased of biased.
But we've all done it. And in the moment when you're in the room, you're like, yeah, I need to do better. I've got to do better at this. And then you walk out the room and it doesn't matter how great the trainer, I've been on brilliant training. Life gets in the way, love.
Yes.
It flies out your head. And so we had started to do some research around starting to think about when we look at bias within the workplace, that is embedded within, to say, 20 to 30% of all written communication.
Really?
Yes.
Explain. Give me some samples there now.
So if you think about written communication with an organisation, it didn't fall out the sky. It's developed over many years. And even in the best organisations, you would still see maybe some bias within that. And when we'd start...
Such as?
Well, if even you think about your role where you used to write maybe a job specification.
Okay.
Or where you were trying to gather data around people maybe for promotional purposes.
Yeah.
That type of collateral. As I say, developed over many years, you might still get the remnants of something within there. And then we knew from our own research that if you call out in the moment, actually, that's a bit, you know, there's a little bit of bias in that. It's human nature. And I think it was like 75% of the people would say, I'm going to change that. Like, if this is something, like, if you, it's called out, that there's a call to action there. So we're sitting on all this fabulous data. We have a team of superb data scientists who are all very, very, I mean, these are wonderful around, I won't use the acronym, natural language processing, NLP. And we were thinking, wouldn't it be great if in the moment, if you actually seen that bias within a celebration or within a recognition moment, we could call it out and in the moment, maybe offer an alternative or a teaching moment. And that's what we started to do with something called Inclusion Advisor. And it's a phenomenal piece of AI in terms of using all this fabulous science to actually to support the better self in terms of that. And I'm just trying to think of how I can describe this to you. Have you ever been given a backhanded compliment, Conal?
Frequently. I thought you know. Yes, frequently.
And you know, kind of like you want to take the compliment, but the little piece underneath it would kind of niggle at you.
No, I'll always take a compliment. Always. I am a sponge for anything positive.
Well, you look beautiful today. There you go. How's that?
I was that backhanded. I can feel, oh God, yeah. What's wrong
with my shirt? But no, I mean, and always sometimes you'd feel that little niggle about what's the underlying piece in that. So Inclusion Advisor to us is one of the first pieces that we've done where we're actually saying, in the moment, we are going to tackle head on any of those microaggressions within that moment. And it's actually one of the Lighthouse clients that we work with, Merck.
Lighthouse clients. Jeez, you really do talk a different language.
Lighthouse clients would be one of the first clients who actually pick this up and say, we're going to work with you. This is phenomenal.
And Merck is one of those.
Merck are great partners in this sense. And what they've done, they've actually rolled out an Inclusion Advisor. And over 50% of their employees who use that will change the language around a check-in or an award. And they have a recognition moment on their platform every 23 seconds. Think about that. That's AI in its best form, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
A recognition every 23 seconds.
Yes.
Does this pop up on people's computer screens?
No.
Saying, no.
Go recognise Conal. No, yeah. It doesn't. It's part of the culture. Like great companies are all around empowering. And this is social recognition as well. This isn't top down, best go and show the troops that I'm paying attention. This is social recognition across the organisation and very much peer-to-peer.
23 seconds. Every 23 seconds, something is popping up in Merck.
Yes.
But nobody has time to look at that kind of stuff.
Across the organisation, someone is recognising a colleague.
Is it? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Which is absolutely phenomenal.
So this is the use, a positive use of all that knowledge. Mm. You've obviously, you think, and when I say you, I mean you and your team, think big thoughts about what else you could mine and use. So what else is coming up?
I think we're out talking to some of our customers at the moment around, you know, we're obviously looking at the inclusion advisor and starting to look at that and starting to work with them around what they would like to see next as well. Innovating in this space, it's like it's a green field. It's so, so exciting. And we're actually trying to be terribly responsive and listen to our customers about some of the challenges that they have. And for the last year, as we've come out of the pandemic, this is definitely around understanding retention, understanding what makes a great employer experience, understanding kind of what's on people's mind and that loss of connection through the pandemic and how we can actually start to get that connection back. And that's some of the pieces that we're really trying to drive into at the moment. So it's a really exciting space. I would encourage you to watch this space.
I will be watching this space now. You, and I'm looking at you, you have to answer this truthfully.
Go on.
What is the retention rate in Work Human?
Do you know, I was only talking about this the other day because I'm 10 years next month. I've said that twice now. So please hope someone's getting a message about ordering the cake in time. But I'm 10 years next month. And someone said, oh, you're an old timer. Now, I might be in physical years, but I actually said, I'm actually not, love. They were like, what? And I said, no, like we have so many people who are 20 years. We have our worldwide financial controller, all seeing, all doing. He's 20 years this year. Our supply chain manager is 20 years. We have people in customer service who are 20 years. So in parts of the organization where you'd usually get really high turnover, we have these, they call them veterans. I didn't know if I liked that or not. But like, you know, 20 years plus. Jonathan Hyland, who you were obviously looking at his article in the Irish Times last week, he's obviously 20 years in as well. So there's a lot of people who have been at the start of this journey. So we must be doing something right in order to obviously keep those people with us. And we're going to go to our 1,000 employee very, very soon. We both have milestones. We'll be 1,000 employees and you'll be 100 shows.
Which is brilliant. Now, I'll ask the question again. What is the retention rate in Work Human?
I would say it's well above the average of what you're seeing in technology at the moment. Well above.
Okay, I'm obviously not going to get much more than that out of you. It's a wonderful Irish success story. As we said, born in the Bleeding Horse. And you've now got a unit in Dublin and in Framingham in Massachusetts.
Yes.
Growth, where is the next growth going to come from?
Well, I mean, our growth is phenomenal.
It is. Like you're doubling. Am I right?
Yes. And I say we're going to go for our 1,000th employee very, very soon.
That's if you can get them, but...
I don't think we have a problem there. Like it's a really exciting time for the company. Very exciting. I think in terms of our product, there is so much road to travel in terms of starting to expand that product, starting to really leverage our AI and our data. And we're really excited about that. It's now of its time. Like we said, as we were standing outside, you know, imagine having that conversation 20 years ago. I mean, it would just be like, well, we're paying you. What do you mean recognize you? What's to do with you? But really of its time now. And that's really exciting for us. And I look at our founder as well and think that must be super exciting for them. Because it's kind of, you know, you're actually seeing this come forward. There's lots of, you know, big innovation ideas ready.
Great.
And so I think it really is watch this space. And actually, our Work Human Live conference is usually, we do it in America most years, but we're actually doing our first Work Human Live Europe. And of course, it would have to be in Dublin. I think it's the 26th to the 28th of September. So for anyone who's interested in that Work Human workplace, great place to come and find out a little bit more.
Well, I will give it a further shout out if you send me all the details. Now, you are hiring.
Yes.
So therefore, my final question always to every guest is, who would Andrea C... Sorry, I meant to ask you. You put in Andrea C. What's the C for?
Christine.
Andrea, who would Andrea Christie Johnson Higher in a heartbeat.
Higher in a heartbeat. I was actually dreading you asking me this question.
Why?
Because I was listening to the, obviously, podcast that had gone on before, and I was thinking, I hope we run out of time and he doesn't get that. Because there's so many amazing people that I would really love to hire.
Well, you're allowed to have a few.
Am I allowed to have a few? So maybe a couple that could come on as guests for next shows.
Yeah.
When you're talking about being ahead of the time, Keira Garvin at Work Juggle, an amazing woman. If we could clone her, it would be absolutely phenomenal. We could sort a lot of stuff out. And she basically set up a company about really trying to look for flexible working opportunities for women. And again, when, you know, she would be knocking down doors and people would say, why are we having this conversation? So definitely Keira Garvin would be one of them, founder of Work Juggle, I think. I loved the podcast with Professor Curley. I thought it was phenomenal. But anyone who I meet in medtech is of the same vein. They will blow your mind. And actually, the new CEO of MedTech Ireland works on our on the WITS board, Susan Tracy.
Which is the Women in
Technology and Science.
Thank you. And sorry, Susan?
Susan Tracy. And she's CEO of MedTech Ireland. And again, she's just this phenomenal woman who can really talk to that journey around women in medtech. So they're two definitely for the show, I think, going forward.
I would be delighted to have them in. I actually like that name, Work Juggle. I hadn't come across them before.
Oh, no, great. But I think I'd love to hire, it would have to be a lovely man called Morris Whelan. He's the founder of Unleash Potential, and he was my first coach. And he introduced that concept to me, Conal, of who is your personal board? And he is definitely on mine.
Okay, that's cool. But if you've hired now three, you may as well keep going and get the full team at this stage. That was really interesting, Andrea. So thank you for joining us on That Great Business Show. Andrea C. Johnson. Dr. Andrea, thanks very much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thinking of travel? If so, make sure to make Defacto, the world's best shaving oil, your choice of travel companion. A 25-milliliter bottle of Defacto means no hassle at airports, no bulky cans to carry, and the guarantee of the world's best shave. DefactoShave.com.
Everyday accounting can be a bit of a drama for SMEs. However, BigRentCloud.com takes the drama away with its simple and easy-to-use cloud-based accounting and payroll software designed for SME owners. Rates and sent invoices, manage VAT reports and obligations, run management reports, link directly to Irish banks, automatically import purchase invoices, and so much more. All with 5-star customer support. BigRentCloud.com, 100% Irish-owned and a proud member of Team GBS.
All That Great Business Show advertisers are Team GBS approved. Back them.
That Great Business Show.
Everyone should have a favorite economist, don't you think? I have a few of them, and one of them is Alan McQuaid, a longtime economic commentator and a friend of mine. However, just like me, he's a little confused as to what is going on in the world's economies. For example, QE, quantitative easing, or the printing of money by central banks that we saw for years, should theoretically have brought on some serious inflation. It didn't. Now we have QT, or quantitative tightening, with interest rates going up. And we're getting rampant inflation. That shouldn't be happening. So, what does this mean for all of us, for businesses, and for the economy in general? Well, Alan has brought in runes, tea leaves, a crystal ball, and a few other essential items to see into the future so we can know what to expect in the coming year or two. No pressure. Alan McQuaid, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thanks, Conal. Great to see you again. It's been a while, but you're looking good.
Come here to me.
Yeah.
Like, you and I read the same economics textbooks.
Yeah.
Printing money was meant to create inflation, and it didn't. Now they're not printing money, and the inflation is, what is it,
7.8 in Ireland. I think yesterday we had figures from both Canada and the UK at 40-year highs. I think most countries are at 40-year highs, so we're back to the 80s on inflation.
So is this directly because of the printing back in the day, or what's going on?
Yeah, it's a very difficult question to answer. I think most economists were caught off guard, really, with the post global financial crisis and the fact that interest rates have been so low, and yet there was no inflation. But I think what's happened, really, I think it's all about consumers and scaring the life out of them, basically, you know. I think that's what's happened. And you've scared the life out of them with the financial crisis. So many people lost so much money. There were so many people in debt. And I think what happened post the financial crisis was that everybody, and that includes governments, corporates, any sort of business and households, all started deleveraging. In other words, we've got debt, we're paying it back. I can't afford to be caught out here with a house loan, a car loan, etc. You know, I think what's happened now is we've scared them the other way. Like, we've scared them in the sense that COVID came along, and all we heard, I think, during COVID was, we're going to die. Everyone's going to die. You know, so...
I love economists.
We're all going to die. So, first of all, we're locked away. And then suddenly, we're after 2 years being sort of in a cage, we're all let loose, but we're all going to die. So what will we do with our money? We better spend it now, because no point having it in with the gravest, you know? I think really, basically, that's what's happened. I think consumers... They got the fright of their life. They lost so much money. Now I think they got the fright of their life in COVID, and they've been let loose. But I think one of the, to me, what disappointing or strange things about all this is that central bankers couldn't see this. I mean, yes, I get the idea that some of this, you know, inflation could be transitory. Clearly, there are supply chain issues. I mean, related to COVID in China in particular, and the war, the awful war between Russia and Ukraine. And you can't really address those, I mean, through monetary policy. But the idea that, you know, there wouldn't be any demand, that you suddenly let people loose after 2 years and there wouldn't be any sort of impact, I find that very, very strange. And I think we're seeing with the European Central Bank, I think they've been very slow to respond to this. They really should have been... Bank of England raised rates back in December. ECB hasn't even moved yet, and we're into July.
But that's political, isn't it? I mean, are they not playing to their political masters eventually? No politician wants to be seen to be sticking up interest rates.
Well, I think yes and no. I think if you go back, look at the US and Trump, I mean, one of the issues that he was going to fire the head of the Fed, Jay Powell, he didn't. And I think one of the good things, I think, is that central banks are, in theory at least, independent, and they should be allowed to get on with it. I think, in fairness to the ECB, and I give them some credit here, is that they don't have a great history. And if you go back to 2008 and 2011, they raised interest rates stupidly. So in other words, the hawks, those people who are afraid of inflation, won the battle. And I think that scar, or those scars, have lived on since. And I think the people in charge now are more in the sort of easygoing style. The doves are not worried about inflation. But I think they're also afraid that, you know, they've learned their lesson and said, oh, we don't want to be raising rates too quickly. But I think, unfortunately, this time around, they've probably been a bit too slow. And the other worrying thing, just sort of if you're superstitious, is that the last time we had a French president of the ECB, it didn't work out very well for Ireland. I think, you know, Jean-Claude Trichet wasn't the Ireland's friend. Now, I have great admiration for Christine Lagarde, I think, as a woman. I think she was fantastic. I think she was a great role model for women generally. I think she did a great job as French finance minister and in the IMF. Not too sure this is the right job for her, though. And
why?
I just think the messages she's sending out is very much mixed signals. I think her predecessor, Draghi, seemed to be consistency in his thinking. It was always, we're going to do what needs to be done to save the euro, and you believe them. I think with Christine, you get the feeling she's not too sure herself. She's relying on Philip Lane. Philip is a great economist and a really deep thinker, you know. But it's interesting, you were making the introduction there, and we were talking off air about PhDs and all this. One of my big bugbears about life in general is that, and I know you have this piece at the end, you asked pretty business people about hiring, you know, you're going to hire.
I'll be asking you that as well, remember?
But the same thing is, if you do ask me, the issue is this. To me, the most important thing hiring anybody is common sense. You have to have common sense to spades. I don't want someone who's got multiple degrees coming out of their backside. I did a degree at night. A BA at night. Now, I could have done another BA, but then I would have been, because my name is Alan, I would have been called Alibaba and the 40 Degrees. And I just didn't like the idea.
You've been waiting a long time to say that.
But, you know, give me some of the common sense any day over someone with multiple degrees out of their backside. You know, and I think that's part of the problem. There are too many academics working in central banks. They don't know real life, you know. I bet you know central bankers, they don't know the cost of petrol because they're probably all driving big, flashy cars and they don't know the cost of petrol's gone up. But I bet you don't know that they don't know the price of a bottle of milk or a loaf of bread. And that's part of the issue. And it's funny because, I mean, I'm going on a bit here, but I remember a few years ago being at a function where hosted by the Department of Foreign Affairs. And the guest speaker was the then Bank of England Governor Mark Carney. It was a tribute to the late Jim Flaherty, who was the Canadian finance minister who died, but who had obviously had Irish connections. And I managed to speak to Mark for a few minutes. And it was funny because actually at the time, I used to think that the inflation figures were too low. And I actually went to Mark and said, do you not think the inflation figures are too low? And, you know, that central bankers are obsessed with, inflation expectations, but have no real idea of inflation. And I looked at
these. Sorry, I want to cut across you there. When you say inflation was too low, is it that you wanted it to be seen to be higher, or that people were actually reckoning incorrectly, that they were doing their maths incorrectly?
No, I just thought the CPI or the measure of inflation understated the real true cost of living. And basically I was getting that from my wife, my co-workers, particularly women, a lot of women, because women, and probably still today, do most of the shopping. And I never heard my wife say, oh, that's gone very cheap. And so I was always, oh, everything's gone very, very dear. And you're thinking, well, no consumer actually thinks inflation is actually low or is this low. And I made that was the point I was trying to make to Mark Carney. But he looked at me as if I had five heads. And I just thought to myself, a lot of these guys, they're, and most of them are men, let's face it, again, that's another issue. Most central bankers are men. I mean, the amount of women on governing councils, even these two, is few and far between. So most of them are men. And I go back to my point, even in this day and age about equality, I'd say it's still most women who do the shopping, the basic shopping, the essentials, if you want to call it. I'd say most men don't have a clue. I worked in stockbroking for years, and the guys could all tell you about petrol, and you know, it was always the big thing, energy costs, because there's always this measure where you strip out energy, and fuel and energy out of the CPI, but they couldn't tell you what the pint of milk was costing or anything else.
Probably a bottle of Dom Perignon.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So that's the background,
yeah,
which is kind of muddy, really, because nobody... Is it your gut that we don't really know what's going on? And I don't mean just in Ireland, but more generally.
Yeah, I think so. I think the whole world has changed. I think you can use excuses like we've moved into a more IT-driven world and
a new paradigm.
Yeah, and you change, and this reduces productivity and all this sort of stuff about it, and all this sort of stuff, and this impacts. And then the whole thing about the measures have changed. We're using the same measures, but because the quality of life has changed. In other words, if you're using drugs or medicine, the same drug that 10 years on improves your chances of living 80% more than it did, that, you know, 10 years ago, you have to take that into account. But I just think inflation or the cost of living is generally understated. I think most people, even before this terrible crisis now, I'd say most consumers, if you ask them on the street, would say, well, I don't think inflation is that low. Certainly not as low as the CSO would say. And I'm not blaming the CSO either, but I think the CSO actually does a great job on our statistics here. But I just think that the figures are too low. And I think we just don't get it. And I think everything's theory, but very little practice. We need to get back to going out and seeing what's going on in the world and see how people live and say, I don't know, we need to do something here to respond to this and respond as quickly as we can. You know?
And that is a perfect segue into what can be or what should be done. Our listenership is SME, people in business, people who obviously go to work, etc. They're feeling the pinch. What can they expect?
Well, in terms of inflation, I mean, let's get the bad side out first. I mean, the 7.8 at the moment, I just don't see it coming down anytime soon. You asked me off air about where do I see it going. I But easy to see it hitting 10% plus, you know, this year or early next year.
And this is in Ireland, obviously.
This is in Ireland, yeah. But it's high, and a lot of countries are getting close to that as it is, or developed countries anyway, the big countries. And a lot of people would argue that maybe the response needs to be fiscal rather than monetary. One of the points that some commentators are making is that, going back to what we were saying earlier on, that, you know, if interest rates were effectively at zero, and central banks couldn't generate inflation, then why do we think it'll work the way around that they can get inflation
That's
down?
That's a great question.
By raising rates. But I suppose the counter argument is what I said earlier on too, is that if you know, you're scared a lot of people out of people with the financial crisis and with COVID, and if you scare them enough by raising rates enough, it might work. Plus the fact if people are willing to put record levels of deposit with zero interest rates, you have to assume if rates go up to two, well, they'll get more return bang for my buck now. I'll put my money back in the bank, you know. You'd have to assume. But I think that it's a valid question, and I think I wouldn't be, you know, I wouldn't sort of say it doesn't have merit. I mean, I wouldn't be at all surprised if, you know, the level of rate hikes that are needed to get us back in track are a lot greater than people assume, you know.
Because do remind people, you're old enough because
we bought houses. I mean, you're going to ask when we bought houses. When I 18% bought a house, it was
18% on the mortgage, I remember.
Yeah, that's right.
So just to remind people, these things happen.
These things do happen, they do happen,
That's painful.
Painful, yeah. But of course, I suppose one of the measures that people look at, I suppose economists more than anybody else, is real interest rates. And real interest rates are still very, very, even if they go up, they're still very generous. I mean, back then, like, interest rates were like, the idea that, okay, interest rates go up, but with inflation running at 8%, and interest rates only at 1%, you still have a real interest rate minus 7%, you know?
Which is an ouch.
It's an ouch, yeah. Ouch.
Listen, hold that thought. We have to take a quick break and we will be back in 1 second with more good news from the dismal scientist.
Everyday accounting can be a bit of a drama for SMEs. However, BigRentCloud.com takes the drama away with its simple and easy to use cloud-based accounting and payroll software designed for SME owners. Rates and sent invoices, manage VAT reports and obligations, run management reports, link directly to Irish banks, automatically import purchase invoices and so much more. All with 5-star customer support. BigRentCloud.com, 100% Irish owned and a proud member of Team GBS.
Viscosity. When you shave, you want the highest viscosity because it helps the blade run smoother. DeFacto, the world's best shaving oil, has incredible viscosity. That's why DeFacto leaves your face, underarms or legs nick-free. Higher viscosity makes blades last longer. DeFacto is the best for your skin and your pocket. DeFactoShave.com.
All that great business show advertisers are Team GBS approved. Back them.
And back with me is Alan McQuaid, economist, who's giving us lots of cheery news. Listen, I'm not expecting you to be able to, you know, forecast what's going to happen in the next year or two in any great detail. But would you be hopeful that something good can come out of it? At the moment, it's high rates, inflation. Where can you see a turn which will benefit business?
I think we saw during COVID what the government could do, and they brought in special measures very easily.
That is mad, isn't it? You know, remember back in the day, no government could ever do that. And suddenly there's a massive crisis. And suddenly all of the Keynesian stuff came straight back into play.
Yeah. Well, you know, we went very close to infringing on people's civil liberties, I mean, during the COVID, I think, in my view. I mean, you couldn't walk more. I couldn't walk from here to across the studio, and it's quite narrow, quite small, the studio, I tell you. So without being sort of, you might get a fine for that, you know, and yet we can't fix this out. There are a lot of things they could do. I mean, and the same with the housing.
Such as?
I think you could, particularly say in housing, you could say, okay, we're going to bring a law in that only people, first-time buyers, are going to get houses are going to be for them only. You know, and feck everybody else. I'm sorry, if you could do other measures in terms of...
But how would you do that? So somebody...
To me, look, again, I'm going off.
I know, but I like this.
You know, to me, there are... politicians come on and it's all about social housing, the homelessness situation and not enough houses for ordinary punters. To me, the only issue is not enough punters, not enough houses for ordinary punters. That should be the first thing you address. Working people who are working hard can't get on the housing ladder. That should be your main priority. Everything else secondary, you know. And I'm not trying to... There are a lot of people on social housing who genuinely need it. But there are also people on social housing who are really scamming the state here, you know, and we all know them. And let's not hide over it. And I wish politicians would at least have the decency to say and acknowledge that they exist, you know, because some politicians don't even acknowledge that, you know, and that really gets my goat up, you know. My two daughters, my eldest two, are both, one is 20, now 30 nearly, and the other is 28. They're both at home, and they're, well, you know, living at home. They can't afford a house. They pay their taxes. They work hard, you know, but they've been ignored. They're the real people, and people are of their like who are working hard, who politicians should be looking after. And that should be their main priority, in my view, in terms of housing. Now, in terms of what's going on at the moment, their main priority is to look after, you know, people who are really struggling. And you've got to, there has to be a fiscal response to this, but a fiscal response of both sides to make sure that we don't run out of, you know, money otherwise.
And put words on it. So tell me exactly what you do.
Lower the taxes or for the people at the very low end, or raise the ban but don't pay tax, and you hire the taxes for people, you know, who can afford it.
I was very interested. Did you see ISME, the Small and Medium Enterprise Organisation, were recommending higher taxes for people on over 100,000? I was very surprised to see that.
Yeah, I think that's... But that balances the books, because down the road, we all know what happened, you know, what happens when interest rates go up and bond yields rise, and when you have, especially when you have a country, we have a huge amount of debt outstanding.
200 and something.
And we still, like, you know, we're getting away with it because we have the multinationals which are making our GDP look great, but our debt's still very, very high, and we still have per capita. And I think even with the 5.1 million now, there's more people obviously around than there has been for 200 years, whatever it is, you know. It's still, you know, per capita one of the highest in the world, you know, which is worrying, you know. And again, it's the same cohort, the 18 to 35 who are paying all this. It's the ones who are, I think, badly treated during COVID. They were badly treated during the financial crisis. They're the biggest losers. And they're biggest losers still. We seem to have an obsession with treating young people badly. You know, women and children are losing their lives in the battle in Ukraine and Russia. But the men who are using, most of those men are young men. They're young men in the only starting their lives. World wars, we're always sacrificing young people to protect the old. I just don't get that. I mean, I'm 60. I've lived my life. I'm happy to go. 6 out of 10 isn't bad in any grade. If I get sick, I'm happy. If anyone saw that film Sophie's Choice, that awful film or awful sort of ending to it, where it's just to make a choice between picking up one of her two kids to be sent off to the gas chamber. If you had to make a choice, you'd probably, you know, if parents had to make a choice between protecting their own kids or their parents, there's only one choice, you know?
Give me just one or two other things that you would do to fix the problems.
Well, I think the government has to certainly, I think, subsidise or help businesses like they did during COVID. I think this is as bad a crisis as we've seen in a while. I don't get the idea. I know what the SRI is saying about lowering taxes, but lowering taxes is a better option than forcing or getting employers to raise wages. Because at the end of the day, it's not about wages, it's about disposable income. Someone can be on 100,000 and be taxed 90%. Someone else can be on 20,000 not paying any tax. So it's the money in your pocket at the end of the day. It's not the wages that's the important issue. It's what you have to, you know, in terms of disposable income.
And just a little bit of history there, when you said, and I know you're exaggerating to make a point about the 90%, do you remember the Beatles song about they were paying 19 and sixpence? So in other words, you were paying, what's that, 98.5% tax in the UK back in the 60s.
Yeah, yeah.
So again, it does happen.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
taxed out of existence.
Yeah, yeah. So look, I mean, I think I wouldn't see myself as a socialist, but I do think that you have to help the most vulnerable in this. And there's a lot of people who are... Not those who are saying we're scrounging the system, because there are some of them scrounging, but there are genuinely hardworking people who are struggling. And I think the governments or politicians need to support those. But the idea of giving, you know, pay rises to top civil servants, you know, this, I think that's another, again, personally, another own goal. I think they know they're toast, personally. I think they know they're on their way out. I think if anybody's out there and they're, I'm not encouraging anybody to gamble, but I think most of us know that the odds are probably too short anyway, but Sinn Féin to be at least one member of the, you know, next government, and if not on their own, you know.
Come here to me. Who would you hire in a heartbeat?
My wife.
Oh, that was quick.
Yeah, I've thought about it. That's Vivian. And then, no, sorry, it's Vivienne. It's two V's, two I's, two N's and two E's. She's the only one of the six of us, and there were four kids, and all, including myself. Now, I went to college at night, but the other five have all gone to college and all have degrees. She goes on about the fact that she never had a degree, doesn't have a degree, she never went to college. But going back to my point, she's more common sense than the rest of us put together. She does, you know, she does all the, you know, work around the house in terms of anything that needs to be fixed. She fixes it. She's the one with the toolbox and all this out there and all that. Everything down to a T, she has. She, you know, even when we're going on holidays, she's little notes made about, oh, Alan, four pairs of shorts or something to this and her stuff and all this. Just so organised, so brilliant. No degree or anything else, but I'm telling you, she could fix this mess out a lot quicker than some of those guys or some of those women, particularly guys with multiple degrees coming out of their, you know, where.
And she also has to carry the cross of listening to me.
Oh, and she knows it. And she knows it.
Do you rant on every day?
I do. Yeah, I do.
Alan, that's why I love you. You really are a most interesting guy, and I love your take on what's going on in the world. So please do come back and join us one more time on That Great Business Show, because that is it from That Great Business Show, episode 9393. Share this podcast with your pals. The simplest way I have found to do that is to dump a link into your WhatsApp and send it off to your work-related groups. Then they can listen in the car, walking the dog, or watching the kids play sport. They'll all think you're great for thinking of them, and that's nice. We want your ads. Brilliant brands like Big Red Cloud, Microfinance Ireland, ISME, Virgin Media, Uderos na Gaeltachta all advertise with us. And why doesn't your business do likewise? Alice Carroll of Fox's Bow Whiskey tells me they have exceeded their €500,000 funding by 10%. And there's still one day to go. Well done to them. And I also had a note just as I came into studio from Zip Mobility that they have managed to raise $6.1 million funding to get their e-scooters going around. We had Charlie Gleason on from that. And so thanks to Michal Whelan up in UCD for telling me about that. We work with our great friends here at the Dublin South podcast studios, including sound engineer Brian Confused, who, me, Begley, who makes our podcast super sharp. And later, studio manager Peter Rice adds a bit of QE and QT to make our brilliant even better. The Dublin South podcast studios are open for business. And if you want to record a podcast, check the website and have a chat with Peter. If you'd like the media group to produce your podcast, as we do for the Love Irish Food Group, for example, then I am your Bóchal. Talk to me, please. And LinkedIn is the place to do that. All of our great business insights and tips are brought to you, as always, thanks to our sponsor, De Facto Shaving Oil, the world's best all-natural shaving oil. They back us. Please back them. DeFactoShave.com is where you will get them. And don't forget to buy Business Plus magazine, where we now have our regular column all about the podcast. So from me, Conal O'Moran, Vore Míle Buechas, for listening, agus slán tamall.